Welcome to the Messages Podcast with Every Nation Taipei. We are here for you to know God, grow together, discover purpose, and make a difference in Taipei, Taiwan, and beyond. Please check our site at everynationtaipei.com. Enjoy the message.
There we go. We had these curb cruisers when we were little. It's like those little razor, whatever you call them, scooter things, except they had like air tires on the front and back of them. And we were like 6, 7, 8 years old. And for whatever reason, like now they'd get arrested and we'd be taken off by child services. But our parents would let us just go all over our little town of Arkadelphia on these things. And so naturally, as little kids, as two little boys, we would head over towards the two university campuses and see if we could get any of the college girls to say hi to us. And, you know, as little guys, and anytime we could get them to say hi, we just thought we were like the stuff, right? We were like, yeah, she talked to me. And it was a whole lot of fun. And we would also, being two little boys, we would have these, we would play war all the time. We both had this huge collection of Star Wars characters. Everybody knows what Star Wars is, right? And Transformers, like little Transformers. Does anybody know what G.I. Joe is? Okay, the real American hero, G.I. Joe, all that. So we had all these characters, and they would get in these massive battles together, like at his backyard or in my backyard or in his parents' garage. And we would just have all these scenarios that we'd be going through, and saving people and rescuing people and defeating the bad guys. We also had the bad guys of the different. We had the Cobra Kai and the Cobra and all that stuff. And so we had all these scenarios, and as we got older, we would even role play out in our neighborhoods, which most of the time it was great scenarios where we were like, the Russians were attacking or something like that. This is like back in the 80s, guys. So the Russians were attacking, and we're like fighting to defend off Arkadelphia and our neighborhood and our family. And then sometimes it wasn't. Sometimes, like, there was a cop that lived not too far away, and he had a German Shepherd. He was like a canine cop. And so sometimes we would just like take fireworks and like jump the fence just to see if we could make it. And jump the fence, throw fireworks, and like run as this dog's coming after us. And we'd like jump back over the fence on the other side and like, oh my goodness, let's never do that again. And then like a few months later, we'd do it again to see if we still could. But we always had these war scenarios. And one of our favorite movies to watch together, I know this sounds crazy, and I don't know that my mom approved of it back then or that she even knew, but we loved watching Rambo together. Has anybody seen Rambo? Just like three people. Wow. Do y'all know what Rambo is? Okay, so we'll pull up. So this is Rambo. This is from Rambo First Blood Part 1. If you haven't seen it, it's not really one that I recommend. I'm not like, okay, go out as soon as we finish and watch this. It's pretty gory, right? So, but we loved it when we were little. And so we would watch this together. And I'm going to tell a little side story real quick. A couple, maybe a month and a half ago, Rhonda and I, usually on the weekends, we'll watch a movie together. And we were like looking to see what movies there were. And there was Rambo Last Blood. It just came out like this past year. And I was like, oh man, I really want to see that. Like, I grew up on these movies, but we'll do that. Or I'll do that sometime when you're not here, because that's probably too much for you. And she was like, I grew up on these movies too. And I was like, really? Like, I don't see it. So just to explain, since only three people here have seen it, it's gory. Like, people's arms and legs get chopped off. Like, I mean, it's intense. He's got machine guns. I didn't pull out all of the pictures that they had on the internet for it, but he's like, shirtless with the thing around his head and, shooting his machine guns. And it gets pretty crazy. So I'm thinking, you grew up on this movie? And she's like, yeah. I mean, she couldn't even watch like some of the basic, TV shows and stuff like that weren't even gory. And so we start watching it. I was like, all right, well, let's get that one. So we start watching it, and we get about 3/4 of the way through. And by this point, a lot of people have lost their arms and legs. And she's just like, oh, I can't watch this. I can't watch this. And I'm like, I thought you grew up on this. You talked about loving this. And then we get about 3/4 of the way through, and she's like, just tell me what's going on. And then she goes, wait a minute, where's Adrian? Does anybody know what I'm talking about? So the same movie, the same actor, Sylvester Stallone, He also played a real famous role called Rocky, a boxing movie. And his wife's name was Adrian. The boxing movie is way easier to deal with. It's not gory, gruesome, anything like that. She's like, "Where's Adrian?" And I was like, pause. What? Did you think this was Rocky, the boxer? And she was like, "Yeah, is it not?" And I was like, "No." So it turns out she had never seen any of it. And I got a real big kick out of that, and I'm like holding on to it for as long as I can because it was so fantastic. But yeah, for Josh and I as a little kid, we always had these scenarios that we were always trying to set people free and to make things right. Now I'm going to go into Casey's word for, and felt like the word that the Lord had for every nation, for this body, was raising up Joshuas. And so I felt like as I was preparing for this, I've listened to the last 2 weeks of Kevin. He's done a great job of like setting the stage and explaining where Joshua's name came from and different things that he encountered along the way. And so we're going to touch on that, but I'm going to go over a little bit the who, what, where, when, and why of Joshua. And we're really going to camp on the where, okay? So just to a little bit of a recap, because Kevin's already done a great job the last 2 weeks of this. Who is Joshua? Joshua is a picture of Jesus. Kevin talked about this a lot, especially last week. His name literally is the same name as Jesus, Yeshua, which means the Lord saves. Joshua is the one who actually led, if you don't know and you haven't been here, Joshua is the one who actually led the Israelites into the promised land after 400 years of slavery. And you have stories and you hear about Joshua in almost all of the Pentateuch, and then which is the first five books of the Bible. You hear about him in Exodus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, and then in Joshua itself. He's got a whole book named after him about what he did. And so Kevin's done a great job of covering a lot of what took place and how the Lord used Joshua in those times. But just for anybody that doesn't know, Joshua is the one that led the Israelites into the promised land, into the land that God had promised them. Now, what does that mean to raise up Joshuas? And what does it mean to be a Joshua? This is something that it's an amazing word, and I think it's awesome that this is Casey's word for this body for 2020. But we need to look at and talk about what does it mean? What does that actually mean? Like, if we're going to become Joshuas and we're going to raise up Joshuas, we need to understand who Joshua was, what he carried, what he did, so that we can learn to be like him, which is being like Jesus, right? Because he's the archetype. He was one of the archetypes, one of the pictures of Jesus that we see from the Old Testament of what Jesus was going to do. So I've done a few bullet points here. What I believe it means to raise up Joshuas and what it means to be a Joshua is it's leaders who live completely abandoned to the call of God on their lives. Living in obedience to the Lord and leading God's children into the promise. Okay? I'm going to say that one more time. I think that it's leaders who live completely abandoned to the call of God on their lives. Living in obedience to the Lord and leading God's children into the promise. See, everyone you meet, everyone that we meet, and this is another sermon for another day or another topic or over coffee or something like that. But everyone you meet is either a restored child of God or an estranged child of God. If they've given their lives to Jesus, they're a restored child of God. They're back in the family. They're back part of God's original intent for them. If they haven't yet, they're an estranged child of God, and our job is to bring them back into the family. It's to let them know what Jesus did for them to bring them back into God's family. Psalm 24 says, "The earth is the Lord's and all it contains, the world and those who dwell in it. Everything is his." In John 1:12, it says, "But as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God, even to those who believe in his name." See, right there we see and we can get a picture of we were all created to be God's children. We were all created to in his image and to be his imager, to represent him where we are. There's just so many people who don't know it yet. So it's leading God's children into the promise that he has for them in Jesus. Raising up people who trust and live for the Lord wholeheartedly and who are warriors. And who are warriors. I saw the other day, I was walking across, I was leaving Chosha, which Stephen, my buddy back here, works at Chosha. That's one of the companies that I'm helping out with. I'm there a couple days a week. It's great to see you, Stephen. I'm glad he's here. He's dating a girl from the Philippines who's been here twice. She's come here to visit him in Taiwan and has come here. She's part of Victory in the Philippines and has come here. So whenever he messaged her that he was here this morning, she was like, oh, yeah, I've been there a couple times whenever I've gone to Taiwan to visit, which is pretty cool. But as I was leaving there the other day, I'm walking across the crosswalk, and I tried so bad to get a picture of it, but I saw this jacket. This guy was on his scooter, and on his jacket it said, I wish I wrote it up here. It said, be a warrior. Like, it actually had this word. Be a warrior, not a warrior. So it had the same word spelled twice. And I was kind of fired up and confused all at the same time as I read it. I think what they meant to write on the jacket was be a warrior, not a warrior. Like, but they wrote be a warrior, not a warrior. And I was like, yeah. As soon as I started reading this jacket, I was like, yeah. And then I was like, wait, what? I don't know what. What are you trying to communicate? I like paradox, but that's really taking it to the next level. I love seeing that. I tried to get a picture of it, but I was like sprinting across because it was down, the man had already turned red and he's already starting to gas up. And I'm like, oh, running with my briefcase and couldn't get it. But anyways, I still remember it. So, and then the last thing that I want to say about this, what does it mean to raise up Joshua's? To raise up people, we've got to spend time with them. It requires discipleship. It requires learning to hear and obey, taking risks. And I'll get more into that here in a minute. If you know me at all, you know that I always talk about discipleship. It's one of my passions. So you can never get away from it if you ever listen to me speak. Sorry. But it does. To raise up Joshua's, it requires discipleship. It requires teaching people and learning ourselves how to hear and how to obey, how to listen, how to respond to that. It requires risk-taking. So next I want to get into where Joshua's built, and here's where we're going to hunker down a bit. So again, like I mentioned, Kevin covered a lot of the pre-Joshua stories, and so I'm going to hit on a few of those that he's talked about. But I want to talk about, really, as we look at this, I want us to see and have that idea of where Joshua's are built, that idea of where in mind. How did he become who he became? I don't think that's part of my slide. But anyways, so he started off, he was a slave in Egypt, right? A lot of us don't really think about that, but he was a slave living in slavery, living in oppression in Egypt. He saw how the Lord brought deliverance. He saw the plagues that the Lord brought on the Egyptians. He saw and was able to walk through the Red Sea. He saw the cloud come down to protect them from their enemies. He saw the fire come down to protect them from their enemies. He saw the Red Sea part and the land dry up so that they could walk through it. He saw as they got to the other side, he saw all their enemies drown in the Red Sea. He saw all of these things. So he was molded. This is his framework. This is what he's coming out of the oppression, out of the slavery, seeing the deliverance, seeing the hand of the Lord throughout all of this, right? So then he's with Moses. He serves Moses. He's in the tent of meeting. When Moses was going to the tent of meeting, and Kevin talked about this 2 weeks ago in Exodus 33:11, it said that Moses would go in to listen to the Lord, and Joshua would go in with him. And when Moses would return back to the camp, Joshua stayed. Joshua would stay there. He wanted to get all that he could from the Lord. He wanted to spend as much time in the presence as he could spend. And back then, that was where they spent time in the presence, was in the tent. And there was only a few that could go in there. And he would stay. And he developed intimacy with the Father. He saw how Moses had to act in obedience. He saw how as the Lord would speak to Moses, Moses would obey, even when everybody around him was complaining, even when everybody around him was saying something different. He saw how Moses stayed with it and stayed with the Lord, and he was able to learn from him through that whole process. He also saw what happened when he disobeyed, right? Like Moses, remember God told him, speak to the rock, but Moses was ticked, and he hit the rock, and the Lord was like, because you didn't honor me, you don't get to actually lead them into the promised land. He saw what happened. Josh was able to see what happened when disobedience took place. He was able to learn from Moses as Moses brought him in and as Moses taught him and allowed him to be a part of his life. He was able to learn and walk and see and grow and learn in a discipleship type relationship from Moses how to follow the Lord, how to hear, how to listen, how to respond in obedience. What happens when you disobey? How to spend time in the presence. He learned all these things from Moses. Another thing that we see for Joshua is that he learned on the battlefield. 2 weeks ago, Kevin talked about Exodus 17, I believe it was, 2 weeks ago, when the Israelite Amalek came, King Amalek came to fight against them. And it's most famous for Moses being up on the mountain, and Aaron and Hur were up there holding his hands up. Every time his hands were up in the air, the Israelites were winning. Every time his hands were down, Amalek and his nation was winning, and so they went up there and held his hands up. But one of the things that I think we miss is that Joshua was down there fighting. He, sword in hand, blood and sweat on his face. He was down there fighting. That's where Joshua was built. He knows what's going on up there with Moses, but he's down in the battle. He's fighting. He's learning. He's growing. He's seeing what has to happen to be able to enter the promised land. Okay? He was battle-worn. He was scarred. He was ready. He had been in the trenches. He had trained there. He knew that feel of still sweat and blood in his hands and on his body. He knew the sound and the reality of battle. See, we haven't been called to live cozy lives, and I'm not talking about where you live, where you work, anything like that. That's not what I'm talking about. We're all over the place. The Lord's called us, and I'll talk about this in a minute. God has us specifically in different places all over the place to reach people. So I'm not talking about where you live, how much money you make, anything like that. I'm talking about he hasn't called us to live cozy lives of just being saved and, oh, thank you, Jesus. I'm going to go to heaven when I die. That's not what he's called us to. If that's all we believe, if that's the only place that we go that our mind goes and where we want to stay, then we're missing it, man. We're missing it. Because we haven't been called to live cozily. We haven't been called to just get by. We've been called into a family and into a kingdom and to fight alongside as brothers and to fight on behalf of Jesus and what he died and resurrected for. And that's to destroy the works of the enemy and to bring the sons and daughters of God back into the family. And it requires blood and sweat and tears. It requires learning how to wield a sword, how to carry a shield, how to throw a spear. It requires all of those things. What I titled this, because I know this is, I know we like to have titles for it. What I titled this whole thing was, it's time to show up for the fight. It's time to show up for the fight. So I'm talking about stepping onto the battlefield and doing what it is that Jesus has called us to do. Joshua grew. He was developed through spying out the land. He was one of only two guys. We've talked about this. He was one of only two guys who was allowed to enter to his faithfulness. In Numbers 13, we don't have it up here. And I'm sorry, I'm kind of rushing through. I don't have a specific passage because I really felt like the Lord wanted me to look at Joshua's life and where he was made and what that means for us. So I'm just going to read this. Numbers 13, 27 to 33. So the 12 spies, they go out into the land. Moses is in charge at this time. Joshua and Caleb and then 10 other guys. They go out, they look over everything, and they come back. And here's what the 10 guys say, okay? It was like God said, but man, the people are strong. Their cities are huge and they're fortified. There's giants there. Our enemies are there. And then Caleb quieted the people because all the people start freaking out. They're like, oh my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Caleb quiets everybody, and he says, "We should by all means go and take possession of this, for we will surely overcome it." But the other 10 disagreed and claimed there was no way. They were like, we were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight. Now pause, quick question. How did they know that? How did they know that? They either lied, they either made it up, or they went and asked them, "Hey, you're big, we're small. We must look like grasshoppers, huh?" Yeah. Yeah, that's what I thought. Thanks. So they either lied about it and made it up to avoid the battle that was ahead, or they went and asked them. Either way, it was stupid. Would you agree with that? Lying to get out of it, or going and asking them and putting the words in their own mouths. Either way, it was stupid. So then, continuing on, Numbers 14, verses 6 to 9, Joshua and Caleb, when all Israel's like, "No, we're not going. We're listening to these 10 guys. We're not listening to the Lord," Joshua and Caleb and Moses. "We're listening to these 10 guys right here." Joshua and Caleb tore their clothes, which was a sign. Kevin talked about this. It was a sign of mourning and repentance and pleading. "Don't do this." "And spoke to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, saying, 'The land which we pass through to spout is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord is pleased with us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only don't rebel against the Lord, and do not fear the people of the land, for they will be our prey. Their protection has been removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them.'" Man, that spirit that Joshua and Caleb carried, that's what I'm talking about. That's what a Joshua is. Even when everybody else is like, "No, there's no way we can do this. No, they're too big. It's too heavily fortified. We can't do it." They knew the promise of God. They remembered the faithfulness of God. They knew that their protection, they even say right there, their protection has been removed from them, and they will be our prey. Come on. Come on. So Joshua, along with his buddy Caleb, he saw the land. He saw the giants. He saw the fortified cities, and yet he was still confident and undeterred toward the promises of God. Amen? So Joshua, because of the disobedience of all of Israel, Joshua and Caleb, they were the ones that God said, "Okay, because you two believed, because you two stood up, you get to go in. Everybody else, we're waiting until they die out." And so they wait 40 years. 40 years. One for each day, a year for each day that the spies were in the land, until that whole generation died out. But throughout that, they're still fighting. They still had people coming to attack them. They still fought giants. I don't have time to get into it. But Og, it talks about Og and the king of Bashan, I believe it is, come after them. They're giants. They're descendants of the giants, of the giant clans. They're descendants of these other gods. They still have to fight them through these 40 years. They still have to remain faithful. They still have to follow. And when that whole generation passes away, after 40 years of faithfulness, continuing to believe the promises of the Lord, they were able to go in. So then, in Deuteronomy 34, verse 9, it says, "Now Joshua was filled with the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands on him." Moses passed along to him that spirit of wisdom that he had carried, and basically took his mantle as leader and gave it to Joshua. And so then comes the charge from God to Joshua as we get in Joshua chapter 1. And I do have this up here on the screen, I believe. So Joshua was now put in charge. He was to lead the people. In Joshua chapter 1, verse 3, and then 5 through 9, God says to Joshua, "Every place on which the sole of your foot treads, I have given it to you, just as I spoke to Moses. No man will be able to stand before you all the days of your life. Just as I have been with Moses, I will be with you. I will not fail you or forsake you. Be strong and courageous, for you shall give this people possession of the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous. Be careful to do all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, so that you may have success wherever you go. This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have success. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not tremble or be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. That's a pretty awesome word from the Lord. I mean, how would you feel if you're sitting in your room one night praying, about to go to sleep, and all of a sudden the Lord speaks this to you? Seriously. How would you feel? It'd make you puff your chest out a little bit more, wouldn't it? Like, yeah, come on. I mean, that's a heavy word, and those are big shoes to fill, but the Lord's saying, I'm with you wherever you go. Nobody can stand before you. Man, what would you try to accomplish if you knew that nothing could get in your way? Or that anything that did try to get in your way, you were like, what? Seriously, what? What would you try to accomplish? Think about that. If you knew, if the Lord spoke this to you, well, here's some news. It's not really a spoiler alert. This is what he's speaking to you. This is what he's speaking to you. Every place he puts us, he's given it to us. Every place. He says over and over, be strong and courageous. He repeats that to Joshua over and over. Stand on the Lord's promises. Be strong and courageous. He says, this book of the law, meditate on it, so that you may be careful to do all that is written in it, which will make your way prosperous and lead to success. We've got to be a people who honor the word. We've got to be a people who don't live from flashy sermon to flashy sermon, or amazing podcast to amazing podcast, or even just people who live from a place of like, well, I've been saved, so some glad morning when this life is o'er, I'll fly away. I'll fly away, oh glory. We can't be a people who live in that place. We've got to be a people who know the word, who meditate on the word day and night, so that we know what it says, so that we know what we're supposed to do, so that we know who we are, so that we know what we carry. Amen? Be in the word. It's not one of my big points today, but man, just be in the word. Consume it. Let it be your life. There's so much good in there. There's so much identity, promise, power, authority that come from that place that will reinforce who the Lord is in you, and that will open you up to who it is that he is for you. For the Lord is with you wherever you go. With God on our side, hey, listen, I know this is kind of a cliche thing that you've probably heard a lot, but seriously, if we look at this passage, it is so true. With God on our side, we're always in the majority. Amen? We are always in the majority, no matter how big, like they see all these giants, everybody that towers over them, all these people that outnumber them. I haven't done the math, but like 1,000 to 1 that are in this land, all of these people, they're still in the majority because they have a promise from God and he's on their side. Right? So, getting back to Josh's story, my buddy from childhood, after graduating high school, he had moved away when he was in sixth grade. He had to move to Texas, but he came back every summer, and we would spend the summers together. And as we got older, it went from like playing with G.I. Joes. We weren't like 17 playing with G.I. Joe action figures, you know, doing this stuff. We came back, and his dad had a farm. We'd go out to the farm. We'd have real guns and like shoot things and have these scenarios and paintball guns and all this stuff. We'd be on four-wheelers and doing all this, like, you know, just country boy stuff that I grew up doing. And we'd still have these scenarios of like, all right, the commies are coming from over there. Here's where we're going to take up residence. Like all this, you know, we had all these scenarios played out. But after graduating high school, Josh went on to become a Navy SEAL. If anybody doesn't know what a Navy SEAL is, they're one of the most, if not the most, elite group of soldiers on planet Earth. Like, they're the best of the best. I, on the other hand, went on to become a male model. Thank you. Thank you for that over there. Why is everybody else laughing about that? Jeez. Okay, I didn't. Which is pretty obvious, but So with Josh, and I know usually I tell a lot of my own stories, but I really want to highlight him. I'm really proud of him and what he's done with his life. This is a picture of me and him with a couple of his, like, special-issued Sig Sauer guns. We were up in Virginia Beach. One time I went up to visit him and the teams, and it was just a whole lot of fun being able to be with those guys and see what it is that they do and hear stories. And we've kept up over the years. In fact, Ron and I just celebrated our 13th wedding anniversary this past week. Yeah, woo-woo. And it was during that, Mark was there for it, the humidity of Taiwan has caused problems with this. But it was during that that Mark was one of my groomsmen, and Josh also was one of my groomsmen. And he gifted me this when we were there, or when he came down for the wedding. It's his machete that he was given by the Navy SEALs whenever he went and was initially deployed down in South America, that he used down in Colombia and amongst the drug traffickers and human traffickers and things like that down there. He gifted me this, and then he had, at the time he was on SEAL Team 10, and he had their emblem and blaze up on this. And so I've always carried this with me for the last 13 years as like a sign of, I mean, it's just something that I'm proud to have, you know. And I'm not a SEAL, and it doesn't make me think I'm a SEAL. Don't get me wrong. But it's something that I carry because I'm really proud of him and what he's done. And it just, it encourages me, it inspires me spiritually, to be honest, to have the same, to remember what it takes, if that makes sense. So that'll probably fall down there. The Taiwan humidity has taken that that glue off, and so I got to get that fixed. But anyways, so as we've talked a lot over the years about the things that he's been through, training he's gone through, friends he's lost, fights he's been in, things he's seen, shrapnel he's taken, near misses, it's always very sobering. But in all honesty, it also fires me up. See, maybe I'm a little crazy, but I love that stuff. I always have. Like you heard me talk about earlier, from the very beginning, we've always been about making things right, going into the fight, going to make things right. Okay? So, like I said before, I'm really proud of him, the things that he's endured to become the best. And it's something that I want to learn from. They're doing it physically. I want to learn from it, well, physically also, but also spiritually, like what it takes. One of the things that's always stood with me has been the training process that they go through. So as soon as they sign up to become Navy SEALs, they go into this training program. And one of the first things that they have to go through is this thing called Hell Week. And it's called Hell Week for a reason. They basically try to put them through hell. It's designed to defeat them. That's its intention, is to defeat them. And of the hundreds of people that go into the training process, usually only about 20 to 30% of them make it through this. So this week, where they almost zero sleep, or they might get sleep in 1 or 2 hour increments throughout the process, they're always in the freezing cold, ice cold water. They're carrying and running and jogging with these huge pontoon boats on their heads as teams. They have to get their feet tied up and thrown into the water to learn how to survive and basically get drowned. Like that bottom picture, that bottom right picture, that dude had water blackout, which basically means he passed out and was at the point of death. They had to revive him. That's like normal day in a Navy SEAL's Hell Week, is it's designed to defeat them. It's designed to show them that the truth about what they're being told, that their mind can overcome what their body says they can't. Right? And there's so much power in that for us. We can overcome so much more spiritually than we think we can when the Lord has given us that promise. And if we can set our minds on that, our hearts on that, and really grab hold of that, man, there's so much we can accomplish. I view Navy Joshua's, like we're talking about, as like the Navy SEALs of the spirit world, if you will. And if we're raising those guys and girls up, then man, that's what it is. They learn to let their mind control their body. We learn to let our spirit control our emotions, control the things that our senses see in front of us. Well, that's impossible. Chang, who Stephen works for, He asked me the other day, he's got this huge grand vision. Stephen can tell you. It's this huge grand vision to see the education system and the sports system change here in all of Asia. It's a huge dream. And Chang asked me just the other day, he was like, is this impossible? Am I just crazy? Or is this really doable? And I was like, well, what's the difference? You got to have a little crazy in you, right? To think that you can make a change, to think that you can bring change, you got to have some crazy in you, right? You got to believe things that you can't physically see or touch in front of you. You got to believe the things that are in faith of what is to come. So through this tearing down, through this breaking down, they're built up into unstoppable warriors. And in that process, they learn that whoever makes it through with me, I can count on them to not quit. That's what we want to raise up here. That's what I want to raise, who I want to raise up in my life. See, every person I disciple, I know and had learned a lot from years past in that whole the cell church model of how you do things. You've got these groups and you identify like one or two leaders so that you can split and they can lead it and everything. And I get that. I understand that. But I'm like, man, if I'm meeting with somebody and discipling somebody, then they're a leader. By golly, they're a Joshua. Every single person. If we're meeting together, then you can lead people. Then you can walk in your identity. Then you can walk in the power and the authority of Jesus. You can do it. If I'm meeting with you, we need to have a mentality change. It's not just for the one or two, for the Joshua and Caleb, and then everybody else follows. Like, we become Joshuas, we become Calebs, we become like Jesus, so that every person we're leading can also do that. Every single person that we're leading can also do that. And he had to lead them through the very people that they were afraid of the first time. He didn't get a pass on, okay, you can just go around the giants. You can go around the cities. He still had to go through it. And there's a lot that I can't get into right now, but I do want to ask, what are the fortified cities and giants in your life? What are the fortified giants and cities in my life? Is it fear of not knowing enough? Is it a fear of man, what other people are going to think about you? Is it a fear of messing up? Sometimes it's not even fear, but it's just ignorance. And that, no offense. No offense is intended there. But sometimes we don't even realize what we're actually a part of. We got saved to go to heaven, but we don't realize that we're saved to be a part of a kingdom now. To see his kingdom come, his will be done on earth now as it is in heaven. Sometimes we're just ignorant of the fact. And ignorance doesn't mean stupid. It just means you don't know it yet. Today you know it. We're not ignorant anymore, right? So we miss out on partnering with the one who's already won the war, who's never lost a fight. Jesus has never lost a fight. He's invited us to partner with him. We miss out on that. He wants to empower us to go and take back what he died and resurrected to save, his creation. He chose me. He chose you individually. You. He chose us collectively as his body. To go out and to take back what he died and resurrected to save, to reconnect to the Father. One thing you got to understand, whatever the Lord's promises are to you, it's on the other side of obedience and war. We've got to learn how to fight. I oftentimes wonder how many battles and how many lives I've given to the enemy, or I've just left over to the enemy. Because I was afraid to engage. Think about that. How many lives, how many people have we given over to the enemy because we were afraid to engage? We felt like we didn't know enough. We felt like, oh man, they'll get upset with me if I talk to them or say something to them or engage them for Jesus. How many people, it's not meant to condemn us, but it's meant to sober us a little bit. It's not meant to condemn me, but it's meant to sober me a little bit. Like, that is the reality. But see, God's a God of restoration. He can redeem that. When I look at Caleb, when I look at Joshua, these guys were in their 80s when they took the promised land. 80s! They could have done it when they were in their 40s. They were in their 80s. Most people we see nowadays in their 80s are like walkers and like, well, I'm retired. I'm doing my thing. Leave me alone. These guys were like, Caleb came up and he was like, hey, you remember God promised me that place where the giants are. You were there. God promised me that. I'm 85. I can still wield this sword. I still got to fight. How many of us have a fight in us? How many of us still have a fight in us to destroy the works of the devil, to go after what it is that Jesus died and asks us to come in to help him reclaim? We got to not be afraid to get in the fight. So the last thing I'll share, I know that getting close, but so here's one encouraging thing. Well, let me just say, there comes a time when we say enough's enough and that we're not going to settle anymore, right? We're not going to settle and just be content with just getting by, but we want to make a difference. And here's one thing last thing that I'll share. So the 10 spies in all of Israel had the promise of God in history of his deliverance on their side. And yet when they looked with their eyes, they fell apart like a $2 suitcase. They just fell apart and melted before these giants, these fortified cities, because they were looking at what they could see physically and not what the Lord had done and what he had promised them, right? But then whenever it's Josh's turn and Josh comes up and he sends the spies out into the land, they end up with this harlot named Rahab, right? Y'all know this story? They end up with this harlot named Rahab. Listen to what she says, Joshua 2, verses 9 through 11. She said, "I know that the Lord has given you the land and that the terror of you has fallen on us and that the inhabitants of the land have melted away before you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and Og," those are the giants, by the way, "whom you utterly destroyed. When we heard it, our hearts melted and no courage remained in any man any longer because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in heaven above and on earth beneath." Guys, listen to that. That sounds awesome. These people that were in the land had been terrified of them for 40 years. 40 years. They said it happened when we heard what the Lord did with the Red Sea. When we saw what the Lord did with you guys and those giants before you came in. For 40 years, the people that they were afraid of were scared out of their minds of them. They said, "Our hearts melted before us." Come on. 40 years of living in fear of people who were terrified of them. The inhabitants of the land had just melted away. Your enemy, our enemy, Satan, the devil, the gods of this world, they're terrified of you discovering who you really are in Jesus. Terrified of you. If you're in Jesus, the devil, Satan, these people, the gods of this world that we give, for whatever reason, we give them so much control, so much power, so much influence in our lives. Like, I don't know if I should go over there. I don't want to get dirty. I don't want anything bad to rub off on me. Man, light is no respecter of darkness, is it? Is it? Seriously, at night, when you walk into a room and you flip on the switch, it's not like the light and darkness are like, fighting out who's going to win. Boom, it is gone, right? It is gone. The enemy is terrified of you realizing that you carry that light in you. He cannot stand before it. If you know who you are, whose you are, the authority, the power, the life, the love, the joy, the peace that you carry, he can't stand it. Cannot stand it. James 4:7 says, "Submit therefore to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you." Flee, it means seek safety by flight. The devil will seek safety by flight to escape from the danger that he is in. One of my good friends and our lead pastor, Chad Norris, back in the States, he says, his translation of it is, the devil will run in stark terror. Will run in stark terror when you resist him, when you stand in who you are in Jesus Christ. Amen? He is terrified of you. Come on. Come on. You carry something. I carry something that is so detrimental to the enemy, that is so terrifying to the devil, to the gods of this world. They're doing everything that they can. Their main mission in life to those of us who are in Christ, to those of us who believe, is to get you to not believe. See, he knows he can't get us, he knows he can't keep us out of heaven, but he can do everything, he does everything in his power to try to get us to believe that that's all that we can do. He does not want you to know, and he does not want you to understand who you've been created to be, what it is that you carry. It terrifies him. Terrifies him. And that's what you carry. And that's what I want us to start believing. That's what I want to rise up inside of you. If you're not, like, I'm about to have to take my jacket off, ask Mark to come up here, hit him a couple times. Like, I'm fired up about this. This is something that we need to get fired up about and realize and really believe that you carry the light, the life of Jesus that expels all darkness. All darkness. The time is now. Run out of time. I'm not going to share all this stuff, but the time is now. The when, the why. Jesus said, "Behold, I say to you, lift up your eyes and look on the fields. They're white for harvest." There's people all around you. Last night, we were having a conversation. Bertina was at our house about how the Lord's called us to change the culture. We change the culture by going into it. We change the culture by engaging the lives of the people that the Lord's given us. See, this is what I was talking about earlier. That whole cozy thing, it doesn't matter where you are. Whether you're the CEO of this Fortune 500 companies, the wealthiest person here, you've got drivers, all this stuff, or whether you're a student struggling to get by, whether you're stay-at-home mom or dad, wherever you are, none of that matters. You're there to carry the kingdom, the light, the life of Jesus to the people that are there. It starts in our home. It starts in our communities. It starts in our place of business. It starts with our classmates. It starts with our kids. It starts with our spouses. Everywhere you are, you carry the kingdom there. And that's why the Lord has you there. Whether it's what society says is the best of the best or the lowest of the low, doesn't matter. None of that matters. It's about carrying the kingdom and the life of Jesus into those places. And why? Joshua's charge, and I think this is the charge of the Lord to us as well. Joshua's charge when he was about to die, as he said in Joshua 23:8-11, "But you are to cling to the Lord your God as you have done to this day. For the Lord has driven out great and strong nations from before you. And as for you, no man has stood before you to this day. One of your men puts to flight 1,000. Come on. One of your men puts to flight 1,000. For the Lord your God is he who fights for you, just as he has promised. So take diligent heed for yourselves to love the Lord your God." Those are Joshua-type people. People that the enemy is terrified to stand in front of. This is the call of God on our lives. We weren't saved to just go to heaven when we die, like I talked about, but to be a part of his kingdom here on earth. He fights for us. Yes, absolutely he fights for us. But he also requires that we pick up a sword and start swinging it. We have to get bloody. We've got to get sweaty. We've got to learn how to fight the enemy. The weapons of our warfare are not flesh and blood. It's not the swords, the spears, the armor. But the weapons of our warfare are against the enemy who's already lost. He's already defeated. We sing that song, the enemy has been defeated. Death couldn't hold you down. Man, that's who we're partnered with. That's who we're partnered with. So we affect that culture by going into it, by destroying the works of the devil. And then discipleship, man, it's so key to this, raising up Joshua's. Who is it that you need to ask? Can I learn from you? Can I follow you? Ask them. Who is it that is already following you that you need to bring in and say, hey, let's walk this together? Some people might not even know it. Some people you might not even say it to. You're just already living life with them, and it's just simple as, hey, let's start having lunch every Tuesday and Thursday. Why don't you start coming over to my house and bring your family, and we'll start doing this in the evening. Sometimes it's that simple. And through that, you model what it is, just like Moses did for Joshua. You model what it is to experience intimacy, the knowledge, relationship with Jesus. And you disciple them into becoming all that God's created them to be. So where are you? Are you ready to answer that call? Do we have any people here this morning that are ready to raise their hand and say, I'm ready to go there? I'm ready to go there. You can go and come up, Risa. I'm ready to go there. I'm ready to do what it takes to step into my Joshua destiny. I'm ready to lead my people. I'm ready to make disciples. I'm ready to ask someone to disciple me. I'm ready to not just get fat on the knowledge of God, but to actually do something with it. I'm ready to stop merely being a hearer of the word and become a doer of it. I'm ready to stop listening to the cheap lies of the enemy and start taking him to task. See, his lies are cheap. They're cheap, but they're effective because we don't know. We don't show up to the fight. We believe what he says, and so we're like, all right, we're not going to fight. They're cheap, but they're effective, and it's time for us to call him out on that. To stop listening to those lies and call him to task. Who's ready to say, I'm ready to step more fully into my destiny as a son or daughter of the king, as a warrior, as a representative of my king's kingdom? Don't you know that the spirit that raised Christ from the dead is in you? The spirit of God that raised Christ from the dead is in you. Joshua didn't have that. Joshua didn't have the spirit that raised Jesus from the dead. But you do. If you've given your life to Jesus, you do. Come on. If you need prayer for that, to be strong and courageous, to have that spirit rise up within you, then we're happy to pray for you afterwards. If you've already felt it rising up within you, then that's awesome, man. Talk to somebody about it. I'll be available. Casey, Bertina, Kevin will be available up here to talk to you about it, to pray for you. And there might be somebody here this morning who doesn't know Jesus yet, but you felt a stirring in your heart. Maybe you've been like the Israelites. You've been living in fear of the unknown and the what ifs and, oh my goodness, and the lies and the cheap tricks of the enemy that you must serve him or serve yourself. But if you want to experience the life, peace, joy that you've heard me talk about this morning, victory over the enemy, then today can be that day for you, where you give your life to Jesus, where you step out of the lies and you step into the kingdom. You step into your identity as a son or daughter. Today can be that day. Please come talk to us if you have any questions about that. So right now, before we sing, I just want to bless you all real quick. So if you could just hold your hands out like this, I want to release a blessing over all of you. I bless you in the name of Jesus to know the love of Christ that surpasses all knowledge, that you may be filled to the measure of all the fullness of God. To walk in that love and step fearlessly into the authority and commission given to you by Jesus Christ himself. Be strong and courageous in Jesus' name.